Going to the Jew First. This is the Everlasting Nation Broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions in Hickson, Tennessee. And today we'd like to have a special presentation to share with you with Dr. Reynolds Showers, who serves with Friends of Israel Gospel Ministry. Dr. Showers recently spoke at IBJM's annual prophecy conference on the book of Daniel. Now, without further ado, here is Dr. Showers.
When we come to Daniel chapter 5, what we have demonstrated is God's rule over Gentile defenses. God's rule over Gentile defenses demonstrated, chapter 5. And we start out with what is called Belshazzar's Feast. Belshazzar's Feast. Belshazzar was a co-regent with his father, Nabonidus. Nabonidus was king as Belshazzar was growing up, but there was a revolt against Babylonian rule over in the western part of the Babylonian kingdom, and so Nabonidus took the Babylonian soldiers over there to crush that, and he appointed his son, Belshazzar, to be co-regent while he was gone. And after a while, after Nabonidus crushed that revolt, he loved that area so much more than back in Babylon, he decided to settle down there for the rest of his life. And so now Belshazzar is really the one making the decisions and everything for the Babylonian kingdom. Belshazzar had a great feast on one particular night for 1,000 of the Babylonian nobles. They'd all come in from all over the Babylonian kingdom and were inside the city there, and they had this great feast that night. Now, usually at such occasions, the king would sit on a separate table on an elevated platform so that everybody there could watch the king and what he was doing. And it appears that a drinking bout of wine was going on with all the people assembled to see which man could drink everything and still hold his own without collapsing underneath the table and all the rest. After a while, Belshazzar commanded that the sacred vessels that King Nebuchadnezzar, who was already dead by this time, he commanded that the sacred vessels that Nebuchadnezzar took from God's temple in Jerusalem and put in the temple of the chief Babylonian god Marduk, he ordered that those sacred vessels of the God of Israel be brought into the feast as drinking vessels. They were going to get drunk drinking out of God's vessels, and for him, his nobles, his wives, and concubines. Now, back in Babylonian times, concubines were probably there for a sexual orgy. That when these men were going to get three sheets in the wind, you know, after drinking all the wine and getting drunk, there was going to be a sexual orgy going on there. Now, there couldn't have been a more horrible way of degrading the sacred vessels of the God who is opposed to drunkenness and sexual orgies. Now, here's the question. When Nebuchadnezzar conquered areas, he took other countries' gods' vessels from their temples and put them in Marduk's temple. Well, it wasn't just Israel's that were put there. He got them from other countries as well. Why would he zero in on gods, the gods Israel, and not others being brought in there to dishonor the God of Israel? That was his purpose, to totally dishonor the God of Israel. Well, again, there's historical background that gives some indications of this. First, as a boy, Belshazzar had association with the royal court of Nebuchadnezzar. He grew up, maybe it was even within the Babylonian places and everything where King Nebuchadnezzar would be. This indicates that he knew about God's dealings with Nebuchadnezzar, how God had humiliated Nebuchadnezzar. It was the God of Israel that did that. He must have heard about Nebuchadnezzar's dream of the image in which the God of Israel revealed that eventually Babylon would be conquered by a partnership empire, namely Medo-Persia. Must have known about that dream that was recorded back there in the book of Daniel in chapter 2. And also that it indicated that obviously the capital city of Babylon would fall to the Medo-Persians. Now, that's one thing. He knew all that background. The second thing is this. It's a historic fact. The ancient records indicate that the Medo-Persian troops under King Cyrus had already conquered all the areas around the city of Babylon as much as 4 months before the night of Belshazzar's feast. So now, the capital city of Babylon was completely surrounded by the Medo-Persian troops under King Cyrus. On the very night that they had this drunken feast to dishonor the God of Israel. And so on that night, Belshazzar's feast, the people whom God had foretold would take Babylon were already encamped outside the city walls of the capital city. And they'd been out there for about 4 months trying to figure out how can we get inside that city and conquer it and all the rest. Third thing, Nebuchadnezzar, as we saw from chapter 4, had made the city so impregnable that the Babylonians thought that no force could conquer it. No force would be able to conquer it. That thick outer wall that couldn't be penetrated by battering rams and all the fortress towers and ramparts and the second wall and the space in between, they knew would be absolute suicide for soldiers to decide, the Medo-Persian soldiers to scale those walls. Now, here's another interesting thing. But if you're surrounded, you're cut off from the outside world for months, you have to have a constant water supply to survive inside that city. Well, they'd already solved that. Nebuchadnezzar built the walls over top the Euphrates River. It was always running right through the city. They had a constant water supply. In addition, you'd have to have a complete food supply to support the large population of this great capital city to hold out for months and months and months. Ancient records indicate they'd already stored up food to supply the total population of that city for more than 20 years. They were so convinced their city was impregnable to any Gentile force. Let those soldiers sit out there and rot for 20 years. We don't have to care. They can't get into us. We've got all the water we need. We've got all the food to eat. We'll just hold out for 20 years until they give up and go back home. They were so confident of that. And so what Belshazzar was doing was, I guess, by asking for the sacred vessels of the God of Israel, who had foretold in the dream in chapter 2 that Babylon would be conquered by the next great Gentile world empire, Medo-Persia, they decided it's almost our way of thumbing our nose at the God of Israel and say, it doesn't matter what you've said. We are so impregnable, even you can't cause us to fall. And what's interesting, so they just probably laughed at the siege of the Medo-Persians against their city. And so he decided to desecrate God's sacred vessels to show his contempt of God's prophecy concerning the fall of Babylon. Well, as you probably know, all of a sudden, while all this drunken revelry was going on, there was a huge hand, not attached to a body, that appeared up along one of the walls of the banquet hall. And with a finger, it wrote several words. Mena, mena, twice. Mena, mena, tekel, upharsin. Mena, mena, tekel, upharsin. And the biblical account said that when Belshazzar saw that, he grew pale. The color of his face just drained out of his face. He was mentally disturbed. His hip joints went slack. And as a result, his knees were literally knocking together. He was scared to death out of this strange thing that happened that nobody had ever seen before in all their lives. Right away, he yells for the Babylonian wise men. Come in, you know, interpret for us. And once again, they failed. They couldn't read the writing. They couldn't interpret it. And this so greatly alarmed Belshazzar and his perplexed nobles. They were literally falling apart the seams emotionally. And the queen mother, many feel this was probably the wife of Nebuchadnezzar. She continued living years after Nebuchadnezzar died. She came in and told Belshazzar, get Daniel, your father, your ancestor. He had to call for Daniel when the other wise men couldn't interpret dreams and everything else for him. Get him. And so Daniel was brought in. And this is what Daniel interpreted. The word mena meant numbered. And what it signified is God had numbered the days of Belshazzar's kingdom. God had numbered the days of Belshazzar's kingdom and had reckoned that those days had come to their end. And that was written twice to emphasize that to Belshazzar and the nobles there, the certainty of the end of the kingdom of Babylon. The word tekel meant weighed. You know, when you weigh something to see how much it weighs and everything. And that was God's message to say to Belshazzar, your moral worth has been weighed in the balances and found to be totally deficient. You are morally deficient. You're not fit to continue ruling over a kingdom such as Babylon. And the word euphorsin meant broken or divided, broken or divided. And this was God's way of saying, through that term, God had determined to shatter Belshazzar's kingdom and give it to Medo-Persia. Now, how are the Medo-Persians going to get into that city? Well, they noticed the Euphrates River running underneath the two walls. Now, the Babylonians had devised a system whereby when they wanted to, they could drop down into the Euphrates River from the walls like wrought iron fencing. And that way nobody could get in, you know, even coming through the channel. But for some reason, nobody understands that those grates were up inside the wall on this particular night. And so when King Cyrus noticed all this, when Belshazzar and his nobles were doing this drunken debauched scene there in the banquet hall, King Cyrus orders the troops jump down. That what they did was they had for several days dug a side, almost channel to the side, so that they could put in like a ready-made dam and divert the water off of that side channel, and so that the water underneath the walls would be very low. And so when that happened, Cyrus gave the command for soldiers to jump down in there, walk underneath the walls into the city. And that's what they did. And it was so caught the Babylonians by surprise, they had no means whatsoever of stopping this from taking place. And Cyrus, apparently they knew about the banquet that was going on that night, ordered some of his troops go immediately to the banquet hall. And they did, and according to ancient records, when Belshazzar saw them coming in and knew what was happening, he stood up, drew his sword, and they just went up and ran him through and killed him right there on the spot. And so in one night's time, the date was October 13, 539 B.C., the capital city of Babylon fell to the Medo-Persians. Interestingly, in Isaiah chapter 47, verse 9, years before this, God foretold Babylon would fall in one day's time. That's what had happened. October 13, 539 B.C. Now, King Cyrus, the Medo-Persian king, divided his enormous empire into 20 provinces, and he appointed a governor to rule each province, And each province formerly had been an independent kingdom on its own. So now, each governor he placed there as a king to help him rule as sub-kings under him as the ultimate king, help him administer his Medo-Persian rule over all these other kingdoms that they had conquered. One of those sub-kings he appointed was Darius, D-A-R-I-U-S, also known as ancient records as Gubaru. And so he was appointed by King Cyrus to be the sub-king over the former kingdom of Babylon. Now that they've conquered Babylon. And so that gives us the background for chapter 6.
You've been listening to a special presentation of Dr. Reynold Showers on the Book of Daniel here on the Everlasting Nation broadcast. We invite you to come tomorrow as we resume our study on the Book of Daniel with Dr. Showers. For more information, you can contact us here at IBJM at 423-876-8150, or you can go online to ibjm.org for more information. Until next time, may God bless and shalom.